This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, as well as WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Wednesday. Matt and Brett here today. Jeff Stein going to be joining us here in a little bit here to talk politics this hour, 4 o'clock wide open. Brett, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
All righty. Did I say Patrick? I said no.
No, you didn't mention Patrick at all. Nope.
No, he's off today. Slacker.
Much deserved day off, Patrick.
He works all weekend long here. Have you yourself enjoyed the new Jake Gyllenhaal version of Roadhouse on Amazon? Have you seen this?
You know, I wasn't even aware about this until last week when I happened to see a preview of this, and Jake Gyllenhaal is playing the guy in Roadhouse.
He's aberrific, man.
Oh really? Okay.
He's been hitting the gym.
Yeah, I was shocked when I saw. Really, this is who they chose to play it, but yeah, I looked into it and it looks like it could be a pretty decent movie.
Well, it. I love it. It could be a pretty decent movie. You know, it's like.
That's about as optimistic as I can be.
Trump might not be an absolute disgrace to America. That's one of those things.
You're not real optimistic about.
I've watched it. I finally got through it. And.
Was I right or wrong on my prediction?
Okay. So what makes the original Patrick Swayze Roadhouse good is it's camp, cheesy, over-the-top by design. Although, exactly. I mean, there was a little bit of that 80s intensity that was in there.
A little.
The villains in that one. The same thing kind of goes here. If you think about it at all, it's not going to be a good film. It's really not good. You're not going to enjoy it as much as you think you are. Gyllenhaal is almost, and I understand some people don't like the guy and stuff like this. He's almost too good of an actor to put in here. And I'm not saying Patrick Swayze wasn't a good actor. I think he actually was a pretty good actor. But he also was, I don't think it was, you know, in Ghost and Dirty Dancing, which I believe came after Roadhouse. That's when he really kind of became kind of that celeb de cause, du jour sort of thing. I believe that was the case. I think Roadhouse was before those movies. It makes no sense why the hell he did Roadhouse after those movies. that would be weirdo logic. So, yeah, do me a favor. Find out, pull up Patrick Swayze's career and find out when he did Roadhouse versus Dirty Dancing and then Ghost. I imagine that Roadhouse was before that.
Needless to say, Dirty Dancing, 87, Roadhouse, 88, and Ghost is 90.
90. So in Ghost, so he did, and depends on when they filmed it. Yeah, I'm going to guess Roadhouse came out after. It's like, oh, wow, we got this Patrick Swayze movie we're looking to put on TNT. So let's actually put it in the theaters. And that's I'm going to guess. So Gyllenhaal is a much better actor, I think, than Swayze can be, but he does play down to the role pretty well. And if anything, how much can I say here? I wish the campiness started, not campiness, maybe. The kind of the real action in the movie started earlier in the movie. That's the only thing I'll say. I'm willing to check off the old mind and just watch just popcorn fun. But just don't, it's okay. You're not setting up the Lord of the Rings here, okay? It's like, I don't need, where are we going to Mordor again? I mean, isn't this a bar fight? I don't know. I don't need to see that. So I just get to the point, the cheesiness, the tackiness, perfect. I think they took too long to get to that. But overall, I thought it was actually worth watching, man.
That's what I was afraid of originally when I saw the preview. Are they going to make some deep cut origin story and try to make this all serious? And I'm glad you're saying they at least made a pretty campy story. That's what Roadhouse should
sometimes it does come back at you. Mad Max Fury Road. I remember saying, okay, this is just going to be fun camp. And I mean, I remember coming out of the theater after seeing that, and I saw it with my son, and I was like, am I just crazy, or is that movie better? One of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And Mad Max Fury Road is an amazing film. But it didn't surprise on that level, but it didn't disappoint either. It didn't disappoint. I can't say much about the ending or the last third of it. I can't really say anything about that. All I'll say is go. It's not. You're not watching Poor Things. You're not watching Oppenheimer. Okay, it's abrific. You know. I mean, the bad guy early on, when you first introduced to him, who's the UFC fighter, Connor, whatever.
Oh, is it Connor McGregor?
McGregor. He's walking around nude in Italy. That's it. Yeah. Don't overthink it. Although, Oppenheimer, you know, it, a little nudity in Italy. I don't actually. It was. Wait, never mind. All right. Different kind of nudity. How about we say it like that? Very different kind of nudity than Poor Things. Do not. Quick side note. Do not allow your children to watch Poor Things, okay? I'm just going to let you know. That is an educational video, okay? Now, Roadhouse, Gyllenhaal. I give the guy credit. He must have been in the gym. I mean, when you see these guys, it's always funny when you get to you'll watch some guy who's like ripped out ab master, and he's all you have to do is do 10 crunches a day on this little piece of plastic, and you'll be great. No, no, no. They are in the gym 8 hours a day. They are eating an incredibly controlled diet. You know, that's how you get to look like that. You don't get to look like this. When Hugh Jackman was doing the Wolverine, one of the Wolverine movies, I think it was Days of Future Past, to get him so buff for that scene, they dehydrated him. He could not have water for like 12 hours and literally was almost passing out after they would shoot those scenes. That's how you get, I mean, that is not a normal look. Let's just put it that way. And Gyllenhaal, he got the gold star pass to the Snap Fitness or whatever it was, because he's, you know, he, like I said, it's abrific. Yeah, I think on my body there are muscles like that. I don't know where they're at. I haven't seen them in years, man. they're in there somewhere. They're much more reserved. Some people like to be a topographical map. I'm more of a sphere. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So, fun jokey time aside, I want to get into a more serious question, a point here before we get to Stein. And for the people in Chicago who are listening, you'll hear me a lot talk about religion, because I, as a Democrat, have been livid at the way that my religion has been ruined by the Republicans, and that I, because I happen to be, a person who believes in Jesus's teachings to feed the hungry, take care of the sick, shelter the homeless, welcome in strangers from strange lands, that I'm somehow a heathen person, and that unless I follow the Donald Trump version of the Bible, that somehow, some way, I'm a bad guy. Now, my disclaimer, whenever I get into religion, I always do my disclaimer. You do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Christian. I used to be Catholic, and I've talked about this before. My family and I were Catholic. We got married in the Catholic Church. We, you know, kids were baptized in the Catholic Church, First Communion, went through, confirmation, all that stuff. But, and we stayed in the Catholic Church even during the sex scandal, because my wife and I had long discussions about this. The feeling we had is that in our church, in our parish, that wasn't there. That was nothing there. That the priests that were involved in our church had nothing to do with that. And they themselves were some of the most vocal people condemning their own institution at the time. And so we stayed. What finally broke us, though, was this something that we had noticed, that the church was pushing more and more towards the Republican right. And it was interesting, because we'd have priests that were basically fighting to make sure that we remember the Gospel of Matthew and other important things where he gives you very direct orders to help the needy people of the planet. You know, you don't ignore the stories about, you know, the fishes and loaves and feeding the people and healing the sick. I mean, there's tons of them in there. That's basically what we're told to do. But it was when the Conference of Catholic Bishops went out there and basically after Joe Biden, the second Catholic president we've ever had, was elected in 2020, they basically went to war with him saying, we need to rein that Joe Biden in. And that's how they phrased it. Now, after there was a lot of pushback, that's when the bishops came out. Oh, no, this is not against any individual politician. This is just setting a standard. But they couldn't stop their own bishops from running out to the media cameras out in front of the conference. And when they were talking about, you know, how do we punish this mythical generic politician and say, my parishioners want me to rein Joe Biden in. Well, that was the end of it for us. And Father Byron, who passed away since this meeting, he actually sat down with us and he basically said, I don't know where this church is going, because if you go to the seminary right now, all of them are MAGAs. You know, they're the only thing they care about is, you know, preaching against gay people, preaching against abortion, and nothing else seems to matter. And I said, I don't know where this is going. And he said, we were by no means the only people that left. Now, we have ourselves found a nice little church, Lutheran Church. I go there and I'm very happy about it. It's no secret that since religion has gotten into bed with the Republican Party, particularly Christian religions and Catholicism as well, that there has been an undeniable trend, which is something that cannot be denied anymore. And it really is pretty obnoxious, you know, how bad this is getting. This is a Pew Research. A U.S. Christian majority has been shrinking for decades. A Pew Research Center study shows that as of 2020, about 64% of Americans identified as Christian. 50 years ago, the number was 90. So the Christian faith is becoming smaller and smaller. Another story, ask Americans if they believe in God, most will say yes, but growing number have lost faith in organized religions. For the first time since the late 1930s, fewer than half of Americans say they belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque. According to a new report from Gallup, 47% of Americans now say they belong to a house of worship, down from 70% in the mid-1990s and 50% in 2019. The decline is part of a continued drop in membership over the past 20 years. Not a surprise, since they basically got into bed with the Republicans. And in 2022, Statistica put out this, how often do you go to church? Every week, 20%. Almost every week, 10%. Once a month, 11%. Seldom, 26%. Never, 31%. The vast majority of the population either goes to church seldom or never. This has been an ongoing trend. And now there is a brand new study out that basically says, yeah, it's not getting any better. I'll talk about that when I come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Wednesday. Stein coming up here in about a little less than 15 minutes. So the signs have been pointing ever since the Christian faiths were, don't get me wrong, they were welcomed in. The Republicans, needing foot soldiers, seeing they were falling out of favor with the standard voter, welcomed in religious groups to basically try to get them, and successfully in a few election cycles, on their side as foot soldiers, and it did work. The churches, basically a bit hypnotized by the power that the politics was giving them, quickly abandoned a lot of what the church was about and became basically MAGA talking points. You have to hate gay people. Abortion is horrible and wrong, and you better vote for Donald Trump. And that's what it was. And that's what it became. And because of that, religion, and once again, you do or don't do. I'm not here to convert anyone into something they don't want to do. You do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? I'm Christian because I believe it's a faith which represents diversity and equity and inclusion. It's about love, peace, compassion, welcoming. It's about feeding the hungry, taking care of the sick, welcoming in strangers from strange lands, basically bringing the homeless into shelters. We were told repeatedly to do that. You know what Jesus never told us to do in the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? Hate gay people. Nor did he ever condemn abortion. He didn't. And this is the man who makes Christians Christian. What he says and does should matter. But by abandoning all these positivity things and the welcoming and the peace and the compassion that comes from Christianity to embrace this far right dark version of it, all you've done is push people out of your churches, including me, out of the Catholic Church. And it's not getting any better. This is a PRRI study. About one quarter of Americans, 26%, identify as religiously unaffiliated in 2023, a 5% increase from 2013. Nearly one in five Americans left a religious tradition to become religiously unaffiliated. Basically, 20% of people left a religion to become unaffiliated, over one-third of whom were previously Catholic and mainline non-evangelical Protestants. They're fleeing the churches. The percentage of Americans who describe themselves as nothing in particular is similar to a decade ago. The numbers of both atheists and agnostics have doubled since 2013. This is not because this is not anyone's fault but the church themselves, because when you basically go on out there and tell everyone who you need to hate all the time, you don't really bring in the masses. And this is something, when I went back to the Conference of Catholic Bishops and when they did what they did, I said this: what are you thinking is going to happen here? Are you thinking a bunch of people saying, wow, they're going against Joe Biden? Well, I'm not going to be Baptist or Muslim or Jewish anymore. I'm going to become Catholic. Nope, that didn't work for you. And once again, it's not one study, it's not one group, yet another study showing people are fleeing religion at this point. And what is amazing is how much of a seismic societal shift this is in basically 50 years. In 50 years, we have had this massive societal shift. And by the way, I think this is one of the reasons why you see far-right conservatives trying to figure out a way to do forced religion now. Is because they realize that that's the only way. If that's how their whole power structure is set up and they're losing, you know, followers in the pews, well, guess what? Well, maybe we might have to force the people to follow it so they can hold and maintain their power. It is amazing. Catholic loss continues to be the highest among major religious groups. Catholics continue to lose more members than they gain, though the retention rate for Hispanic Catholics is somewhat higher than white Catholics. White mainline non-evangelical Protestants also continue losing more members than they replace. The net loss of members among white evangelical Protestants has declined since 2016. The white evangelical Protestants have one of the highest retention rates of all religious groups, 76%, still not the highest. Black Protestants and Jewish Americans have the highest. But still, they are losing people, which is, they're having a retention rate, but they're only at 76% retention. The reason given by the highest percentage of religious unaffiliated Americans for leaving the faith is that they simply stop believing in their religion's teachings. And when you have priests and pastors who are out there only telling you, MAGA! It's really easy to see how that happens. And by the way, I don't dismiss the fact that some of this is actually people on the extreme far right who don't want to feed people, who don't want to give homeless people shelter, do not want to give sick people medical care, do not want to welcome in strangers from strange lands. I think some of these people are like, what does the Bible say? Well, that's not me. I have no doubt about that. But I think most of these people are fleeing because the church's message is now MAGA! In 2016, approximately 3 in 10 people who left their religion cited negative teachings about treatment of gay and lesbian people as an important factor of their choice. 29%, in 2023, that number rose to 47%. Half the people who are leaving these churches are leaving so because they're being unnecessarily mean and vicious to the LGBTQ population. I'll come back to that in the 4 o'clock hour a little bit. The percentage of religiously unaffiliated Americans who say they no longer identify with their childhood religion due to clergy sexual abuse scandals rose by more than 10 percentage points. Also, there, you know, and once again, it's the amount of people who basically as well have, you know, the politics that have infiltrated the church has also become a major problem. Why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because it is a pretty seismic societal shift in a very short period of time. And in the history of the world, when stuff like this has happened, it's led sometimes to the worst things that have ever happened, stuff like the Spanish Inquisition, where if you're not going to love me one way, I'm going to force you to love me. Who doesn't love a little torture? That sort of thing. Or the Crusades, that sort of thing. I'll prove my allegiance and everyone has to come with me. No, I'm pointing out something. I am pleading with religions to get the heck out of the political realm. I get it. It gives you some power. You feel as if you're doing some good. The reality is you're poisoning the religions. And it's not my job to necessarily save the religions, but as a person who is a Christian, I grew up with this mentality that Jesus was about welcoming, love, compassion, caring, unconditionally. That no matter who you were, that he would sit down with you and love you and care for you and wanted you to find your own faith on your own. And it is incredibly disturbing to me to watch that be disgraced as much as it's been lately. You have no one to blame but yourself for those pews getting emptier and emptier. You have no one to blame but yourself. I would, you know, I could say a lot of things, but let me just say this. You guys need to go to church and read that book and stop with the small pettiness because it's ruining you. Jeff Stein, when we do return. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books at your favorite bookstore and totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report and the Iowa Business Report come to us from his flagship station, KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff Stein, of course, was the basis for Jake Gyllenhaal's ab workout from Roadhouse. Hey there, Jeff.
And I'm still waiting for a check for the residual.
It was like, look.
I'm the body double, and I'm waiting for my money.
Have you seen the Roadhouse movie? New one yet?
No, that's on one of those fancy streaming services, isn't it, that you rich kids have?
Oh, for God's sakes, Iowa, man, come on.
It's nothing to do with Iowa. I would say that whatever state I lived in, I'm just the curmudgeonly old man who believes radio should be AM and television should be free.
Well, there. Okay, I think the next thing that anyone from Generation Z will say is something into the regards of boomer. I don't know. I'm not sure, but I try to avoid saying things like, hey, I'm with you guys, you young hip kids, G. Okay, so.
Sup.
So, homies, home slice. Anyway, for shizzle. Okay, so speaking of for shizzle, let's go to SCOTUS first. So yesterday, it was a very interesting case, the Mifepristone case.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was it's almost like, okay, I know the conservative Supreme Court justices have seen how the elections have gone since they overturned Roe v. Wade. They also know that the standard that they put forward in that ruling was states' rights, and that they're really hesitant to kind of start pasting, you know, wide things. To watch Gorsuch go after this judge in North Texas and say, should we have judges in one, you know, in one court, basically ruling, making laws for every state in the book. That never happened. And he brought the point that it never happened under FDR, 12 fairly important years in this country, yet it's happened 60 times in the last few years. And that this is something that needs to stop, which I think is a really interesting standard. But as well, the thing that they kept coming back to was it's not the case, it was the structure of the case, which meant who has the right to bring the case. These doctors have the right to not perform an abortion if they don't want to. And every time they were asked, so if that's true, then what's your problem? How have you been hurt here in this case? And to see Roberts and Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, I it sure didn't seem like this case is going to get ruled on in a way that conservatives were hoping for, at least.
No, they were hoping that the steamrolling would continue, mm-hmm. and it's not going to. You have some fundamental distinctions here, but the chief among them is the one you mentioned, and it's the legal principle of standing. Standing is the phrase that means you have a dog in the fight.
Yeah.
And you cannot bring an action unless you specifically are an aggrieved party. Now, you can file what are called amicus briefs, friend of the court briefs, in support of someone, but the someone has to have legal standing. And the fact that they were going through such tortured conversation with the attorneys on the standing issue suggests that there could be a coalition of justices. Some who say, absolutely, the drug should be legal. Some who say, we don't need to reach that conclusion because the people who brought the lawsuit did not have standing. So we concur in the result, but not for the reasons. And then you have the strong dissenters. And so that's going to give the conservative element of the court that says there's no standing. You might call that a legal technicality. I just call it the law.
Yeah.
But that's going to be their out, is to say, now, we never weighed in on the merits. You got to bring us a better case that's filed correctly. The trick on that to me is that's the kind of thing that gets caught by a district court. That's the kind of thing, Matt, that gets caught by a circuit court of appeals. In essence, the Supreme Court, those justices have to look and say, geez, the guys down the line, the guys in the Cal sure missed this one. Mm-hmm. It's a little tortured.
Well,
but that's probably how it's going to wind up.
And isn't that kind of what Gorsuch said? It's like, wait a second, wait, do you guys? I mean, you have this. What we have is, and this goes on both sides, you have shopping for districts. And I think that this is what Gorsuch said. And obviously, I think Roberts goes along with him. And then you have the other three, more liberal judges on there. But what Gorsuch was saying is, I don't believe we should have one district judge basically making law for everyone in the country. And and his point is pretty valid. You can't have such consequences from these cases unless you have a lot of legal backing. And clearly they didn't have the legal backing. This just seemed like a judge making his personal opinion known. And it clearly seems to me to signal that the Supreme Court is not going to tolerate too much more of this, the shopping for different courts just to get a specific ruling.
Yeah, but every one of those people wearing a black robe, when they were a lawyer, they were experts at forum shopping. That's what they taught in law school, those who were professors, those who were advocates. I mean, so it's disingenuous for them to say, now you shouldn't be shopping for the best jurisdiction, because they did it themselves. The thing that's interesting, now keep in mind, inconsistency, what? Yeah. But Roberts is the one who did not want to overrule Roe versus Wade. He's the one who was trying to lobby others for a specific ruling that would not have been an overveil. So when you see a closer case potentially, it's not a surprise to think that he does not want to go all this way. That he's one of, in other words, if he's one of those who wants to kind of drive it more down the middle, that's not a surprise, because this is how he's been going all along on this issue. But for Gorsuch, frankly, to say, well, we can't have a situation where different states do things differently. Have you read your rulings?
Yeah.
In the last 3 years?
Well,
I mean, and again, I'm not trying to be flip about it, but it's either a state's rights issue or it isn't. Now, the distinction with this has to do with FDA rules. FDA, the F stands for federal, and that's where you get into a different category. So I can slice this thinly as a lawyer to say the state's rights issue is the one in the Dobbs case, but this has to do with FDA, F is federal, and you could have a different standard. And I could say those are judicially consistent.
And I, regardless of where he was before, and when you're sitting on top of the heap, at that point, you can put forward your opinion. And, you know, let's face it, he did his research saying, you know, we didn't used to do this. I don't like this. I don't want to do this. And regardless of whether he did it himself, he does want to stop it. The other element, going back to the other element of this, which I found fascinating. So the studies that this doctor's group came forward with to make their case against misoprostol have been recanted. They didn't do their peer reviews as they said they did. They lied about that. And then they all lied about their connections to anti-abortion groups. So those had been removed. I thought that was going to be a landmine, but they basically just sidestepped that, realized, you know, good luck trying to bring those now in a new case. If you try to resubmit this, good luck trying to bring those. And just went back to we have laws that say that if you are personally religious consentient, you are not consenting with this with your religion, that you do not have to perform this act. Henceforth, you're out of the picture. How are you hurt? By going back to that very base element of law, it annihilated this case.
Well, and the thing is, when you go to argue a case, you better have two or three different arguments. Yeah. In other words, you've got your first, you got your starter, but when the starter goes down, next player up, right? And so you have to, so the fact that they, you know, they probably knew that they'd be hit with that, all right, let's go to this. If you don't like that argument, Justice, let's go to this one. And that's not to suggest disingenuousness. It's just to suggest that you know, you better have different theories, because if you're pushing all your chips to the center of the table on one issue and one justice doesn't buy in, you know, you've lost the whole thing. This is really important because, and I know you've talked about this on the program, what's the percentage of abortions in America in the last reporting period that use this method? It's like 2/3. You know, and so if you say that the Dobbs case is the law, which it is, unless at some point it's overturned, there's a practical, I don't want to say how to get around it, but if they say Dobbs is the law, but you can administer these drugs, again, where's the practical harm? And I'm saying that in a very practical way. I'm not talking about let's take people's rights away and that's okay. I'm just simply saying in terms of actual outcome. Mm-hmm. This case becomes very, very important, because if you allow the medication, if you allow the pharmaceutical, you know, you've undercut Dobbs, haven't you?
But you see, when you look at the group that brought the lawsuit, their goal mm-hmm. wasn't just to make this illegal in Texas. Right now in Florida, you have a DeSantis who just passed this bill against social media, so that social media can exist in the country. It's just if you're under the age of 14, you can't have a social media page. That's different. He's not trying to enforce that on all people across the country. And right. I think this is why the Supreme Court called them out on this case. And by the way, your point about having two or three arguments ready to go, the FDA did. The FDA was ready for this case. The other guys were not. So they basically just called them out saying, you know, if you're doing this in Texas, okay. If you're doing this just for your own good, well, you already have laws that protect you. Should you be able to dictate what happens in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Chicago from North Texas? And clearly they don't think that should be the case.
Well, it is a tricky – the states' rights issue broadly is a tricky one, because you don't just have 50 individual states. It is part of one republic, and it's always been the tricky balance for the court. But don't you think that those who brought this case or are bringing similar cases sort of got out over their skis on this?
Yeah.
In other words, and this has been, and I don't mean to belittle this, but I'm thinking of a coaching analogy. You know, you've got to win with grace in class and act like you've been there. And it's sort of like the Dobbs case came down, and it's like, we don't know what to do with this. We don't know, you know, we never expected this to happen. And so now they might have been better off just to say, this is a very nice victory, and let that play out. But it's the consistent push further and further that could lead to a turn of public opinion more broadly than what you've already cited with regard to past election results.
Well, and I think part of that is that kind of that hope that finally, okay, now we've got a Supreme Court that's just going to rubber stamp all these conservative issues. And clearly it's not no nuance. I mean, when Gorsuch went out on Native American rights and he's basically saying, no, treaties supersede the Constitution, that's just the law. You know, that was a real stunner, especially in Oklahoma. They were not too happy with that. But, you know, it's kind
and
of
you
when
could never count on Roberts. Right. I mean, no. if you're a conservative, you can't count on Roberts. Now, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just simply saying, to your point about folks saying, hey, we finally got six and we can really do this, that, and the other. Not with that six.
No.
And frankly, it's not new because, Harry Blackmun was supposed to be quite a, how'd you like that local reference for you? Mm-hmm. Was thought at one point to be of one political temperament, turned out to be something. Earl Warren, for crying out loud. I mean, if you really want to go back, justices who are appointed with a certain political predisposition often wind up doing something totally different. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, mm-hmm. As long as they weren't disingenuous about it.
Sandra Day O'Connor, yeah.
Well, right. So to presume that John Roberts is the solid conservative vote, he is the peacemaker taking things down the middle to not have Roe v. Wade overturned, mm-hmm. and other examples all the way down the line.
And Kavanaugh is showing that he is not nearly the conservative bank that they think he is. And Gorsuch is just kind of weird. I mean, he has some things that he seems to be very progressive on and some things he's very, very conservative on. I will say one definitive, though, to watch Alito basically try to make the argument for the plaintiffs in the case, that was Alito and Thomas are clearly – they were prepared to argue. Come on, guys, let's go with them. It was really hard to watch.
Well, imagine how it is in the conference room.
Oh.
when they literally do try to lobby each other. Imagine how that plays out.
Oh, God, that would be sleazy. All right.
Bring pizza for lunch, kids.
Speaking of Roadhouse. All right, we'll take a break. Come on back. Let's talk financial issues with the GOP when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein, kind enough to join us for his usual Wednesday visit. So, Jeff, I want to talk with you about money, because politics comes down to money. I mean, it really, you know, one of the things I remember from 2020 is in September and October, Trump was laying off staff at that point while Biden was buying more ad breaks. And it ended up basically being, a major player there in that case. So far, it's looking even worse for 2024. The last numbers report had basically the GOP with half the money that the Democrats do and Biden does. And let's be honest, most of the money in the Republican Party, whether it's the RNC or Trump's campaign accounts, seems to not be going to campaigning, but going to his lawyers and going to paying off E. Jean Carroll, which that money's gone. That's not going to come back. And, you know, with these other issues, there is a real big problem that is starting to become unignorable in regards to money and the Republicans this election cycle.
They don't have it.
Yeah,
that's the issue. That's it right there. And I don't have a problem. It's been so well known that money from super PACs that are there to support Trump are going to legal fees. They've said that.
Yes.
And so if you're a donor, you know that you're sending money because you want to. You bought stock in Truth Social because you want to. That's all fine in terms of, you're not perpetrating a fraud on the donor. But who's going to give if they really want it to go toward the electoral process? And that's why I had a conversation with a county co-chair today down here on different issues and whatever, and made a very big point about saying, we make it clear in our fundraisers that our money stays local. We may give a little to a congressional candidate, but we're taking care of our county races, our state house races. When the pitch is buy local, I mean, and this is something we've talked about before, that the firewall between Trump and the RNC and other donors is you've got a House committee, you've got a Senate campaign committee, you've got all of these state parties. And I think what you're going to find is that if there is the same amount of money coming in, it's going to be going through different channels because of how people want to make sure that their money actually goes for electing a majority.
But if you're for Trump, okay, you brought up the Truth Social stock. You brought Truth Social stock. That's not going to go help anyone. You're buying his Bible. You're buying his sneakers. You're making a donation directly to Trump in any capacity. That's not going to go help anyone but Trump, if it does go to help Trump, if not his court cases. You are, you know, is the Republican Party – it's interesting what you said about the county guy, because is the Republican Party, do you think – are they out there saying, okay, give to, you know, say Michelle Fischbach up in Minnesota 7 – give money directly to her. You want to elect her, give it to her. Don't give it to anyone else, because that's basically the only way you can ensure she gets the money. That sort of thing. I mean, is it gotten to that point that, you know, they're saying that out loud without really saying the context of what it is?
They're not saying it out loud, but they're pushing it quietly.
Okay.
So in other words, it's not going to be the negative of, if you want to make sure that Matt McNeil gets the campaign money, give to the McNeil for Emperor committee. They're going to say, you know, give your money to the state party, or, you know, they're not going to mention the downside. They're not going to say, don't give it to the RNC, because who knows what's going to happen, because that's a train wreck. And we're learning more and more every day about what a train wreck she left, Ms. McDaniel.
And it's not getting any better. They're saying we can wreck it again.
you're starting in a horrible position, which is why she and the staff was replaced. No, they're not going to say it publicly, don't give to that, but they're going to double down on the positive of help this county. You want your county board of supervisors to lower property taxes? Give to, you know, this kind of thing. So, yeah, there's a very quiet part to this that they're not saying out loud, but the elbow in the ribs is clear.
You've got to hope that Trump doesn't ask for, like, a tribute from the state parties. And, you know, as much as we kind of that sounds like a joke. The reality is if he starts getting into a money crunch, especially when it comes to actually buying the ads and getting out there and running a campaign and paying for staff, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, considering how much he stiffed people for his live shows, and he does it with aplomb, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point this election cycle, he sort of says, I need $1 million from every state party. Or a similar amount, whatever the case may be in the percentage. But I need this money because this, you know, the whole point is, as Laura Trump said, the entire point of the Republican docket right now is to get Trump elected.
Well, and it's not as uncommon for them, for a national party, to make such a proclamation as you may think. This one is tinged with a whole lot of other caveats and concerns, et cetera. I'd sooner think that he'd do the roadshow, and I don't know anything about stiffing people for fees or anything, but he would go to do your state party's fundraiser. And in the past, he would just go and do it to raise money for the local party and to gin up votes. Now it might be there's an appearance fee, there's revenue sharing, there's something, because you can't just dictatorially say, I need $1 million from the state of Minnesota. But it might be, if you want me to headline your fundraiser with people who like to give money, then I need a cut of it.
At what point in your mind does Trump and the RNC have to be somewhat close to where Biden and the DNC are in funds to make this a decent race? Where's in your mind, is it July 1st, August 1st, September 1st? Where do you feel as if they're not there, it's not going to come?
Well, I would tell you that if it's not there by September 1st, it's not going to come.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That doesn't mean that the outcome of the election is preordained by that, because you're right. You were going to have a record amount of spending again. One estimate had more than, was it some, you know, 25% more spending this time than 2 years ago, 15% more ad spending than was the case 4 years ago. Usually 60 cents out of every dollar raised by a national candidate goes to advertising. The Biden number may be pushing 70%. because they're going to not do as many big events. They'll do much more targeted things, either on the social, on radio, on TV. And that's the stuff that sticks with people.
Yeah, and he's had success. He had success with that in 2020, and he's going back to the game plan, and he seems feisty. So I don't.
Why would you not? Why would you not go to the game plan that won?
It's just keep pointing. Listen to what he's saying. Listen to what he's saying. Vote for me. Listen to what he's saying. Vote for me. Of course, the Iowa Politics Report. I'll post this a little bit later on. Jeff, as always, thank you very much, my friend. Chicago, bye. Minneapolis, St. Paul. Hour two up next. Hour two of the show here on your Wednesday, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I will say, of course, one of the things we're super excited about is Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour, which is coming to the Pantages Theater April 13th here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's going to be Steph and Fugelsang, who we talked to yesterday, Hal Sparks, who I'm hoping to chat with here before the event happens, and Frangela. You might be able to even get them on the air with us at some point. Needless to say, we're looking forward to this. We're the debut stop. We are the first tour stop for Sexy Liberal this year. And, you know, go get your tickets. Once again, it is April 13th, Pantages Theater. I tell you what, let's give away a pair of tickets this hour. We're going to give away a pair of tickets this hour. Not now. No. Wait. Like balancing the milk bone on the dog's nose. No! Not yet. We will give away those tickets a little bit later on. Do not harass Brett just yet, because it's my time to harass Brett. Brett, it is... Okay, so sometimes I do find it somewhat stupid that some of these stories that put out there, because I'm going to give Fox 9 a little grief here, because they put out a story that it starts off one way. Inflation is still hitting Americans hard, and many are feeling frustrated with the rising price of goods. Everything is horrible. Burn the world. That sort of thing, right? It can be even harder for single-income households. A new study by Smart Asset revealed how much a single person needs to make to live comfortably in Minnesota cities. Now, I want to make sure we understand this. Comfortably is the key word here. The study analyzed the salary a single adult needs to afford a cozy lifestyle, with some of the largest U.S. cities based on the 50-30-20 rule, 50% of your salary to your needs, 30% to your wants, 20% for saving and paying off debts. All right, so they're seeing Minneapolis, the salary you would need is $93,558 just to get by, because inflation has gone crazy.
This is for a single person, not a household, correct?
This is a single person to live, who basically is, how are you going to make it through the day but cozy? You know, that's, like I said, there's a bipolar element to the beginning of this story. 9-3, Matt's Math Corner, 558 divided by 2. It's $46,000. So you're spending, well, now that's your salary minus taxes. Okay, I better do that, you know, just because someone's going to be upset if I don't. 9-3-5-8-8. Let's say minus $20,000 for taxes.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, good estimate.
Minus $20,000, that gives you $73,000. Divided in half, because this is going to be your expenses, divided by 2 equals $36,794. Now, it should be noted, how many people I know who that's their entire income is $36,794. But you're living cozy as a single individual. If this is your monthly expenses, not including, and once again, I want to make sure that when they talked about that 20-30-20, 20% is paying off your debts or putting into savings. So that's like your student loans, credit card debt. That's in a different category. This is just for your rent, your cable TV, if you still have such a thing, your cell phone, your parking pass, car maintenance, stuff like this. $36,000. I'm just going to go with that's $2,000 a month for a place, man. You're going to have a really nice freaking place for $2,000 a month. I mean, you're going to have a really nice place, like two bedrooms.
Yeah, that even strikes me as possibly being low as well. So, yeah, you're getting at least a $2,000 place, which is pretty decent.
That's a really decent for a single person. Yeah, you're going to be in a nice place.
Even with rent spiking over the past few years, that's still going to get you a decent place.
All right. So this is the problem I have with some of these studies. You know, and first of all, once again, I'm going to go after Fox a little bit, Fox 9 here a little bit, because you present this as, oh, we're barely getting by. And then all of a sudden you basically say $2,000 a month to be cozy. Well, that doesn't sound like you're barely getting by. Barely getting by is $36,000 a year. This is why we have to put out there a minimum wage standard in Minneapolis, because there's a lot of places that would not pay a minimum wage standard if you didn't have that. So Minneapolis, they say you need $93,558. If you wanted to have two working adults with two children, $261,914. Okay. Here's where this gets funny. I'm married, and we have three kids, not two. That is not that's a bit more than my wife and I make. I'll say that, and we live very comfortably. I mean, I don't think it's nothing anything really. I think this is.
No one lives comfortably unless you have two cars per person.
Come on, Matt. Are you updating your TV once a month? St. Paul, $87,360. You're a two-person with two children, salary $256. You're living very comfortably with that. You're paying for your kids' college education completely. You're taking nice vacations every year. You do have at least two cars, if not three, under that. I don't quite know if this is just. It seems like this entire story Fox 9 put out is just basically to try to create a problem when there isn't really a problem. Because I got to imagine most people, if you gave them a salary, let's just go with the St. Paul salary, $87,360. If you gave them that salary, I think most people, that would be more than the average salary person makes per year. And that's people with families. So I think you're going to be, most people would be, hey, great. I can afford some things now. And you're kind of making it seem like this is barely scraping by. The six cities with the lowest salaries need to live comfortably. If there's one in here you want to live in, you can tell me, because there's not one in here I would even want to go close to. Houston, El Paso, Lubbock, no. Toledo, Laredo, no. Milwaukee.
Although
in Milwaukee. There you have to get used to the smell of Miller brewing all the time, because that permeates the entire town. Of course, not a big surprise, the cities with the highest cost of living. To live as a single adult in New York City, $138,000. That's $66 an hour. San Jose, California, which is notoriously high, $136,000 you need. Irvine, same thing. That's one of the California cities, $126. Santa Ana, $126. Boston is god-awful expensive. I don't know if you've ever – when was the last time you were out in Boston?
I haven't been there in a while, no.
That's a pricey town, man. $124, $125 basically. And then San Diego is $122. So we are well below the worst cities. But just – okay, I need Fox 9 to explain a little bit of why is that first paragraph in there? Inflation is still hitting Americans hard, and many are feeling frustrated with the rising price of goods. You're making $93,000-$90,000. You're not nearly as frustrated about the rising cost of goods. You pretty much are – you're not having to sweat out or coupon clip at that point. So, I mean, why that's in the beginning of the story, I don't know. But would you live in any of those cities, the six bottom ones?
Milwaukee, I could – possibly do, but the other ones I'm not too hot on. I got to be honest.
Toledo, the mighty metroplex of Toledo? Come on.
Lubbock, Texas. Who doesn't love a rural Texas with one random town?
Oh, God. There's not a chance in hell. Not a chance in hell I'd live in Texas. I'll visit. Austin's a great town, but yeah. All right. So get that finger handy by the dump button here, because I'm going to get into a story here that makes me very, very angry, because it brings back a lot of the pain of 2020. And after four police officers murdered George Floyd in the street, which they did, the courts have determined this. There was plenty of evidence. They murdered him. He didn't die of any other reason. After the same police department went on a hunting expedition in their own city, culminating with the shooting at and beating in the streets of Jaleel Stallings, the video of the riots of police just without cause firing point blank rubber bullets right into people's faces, and the consistent attack on the media, which we kept saying, it's like, why are the cops constantly going after the media here? And it's just a reminder of the ugliness that was this town, and frankly, the ugliness of what the standard for policing was in this state. Up until that point, and some things have changed, but it shouldn't have taken police officers murdering somebody on camera and then the outrage of this town exploding while police officers went on hunting expeditions in town, whether that was for Jaleel Stallings or for the media. Two LA Times journalists trapped and targeted by Minnesota State Patrol troopers while reporting on civil unrest in Minneapolis following the killing of George Floyd have settled their federal lawsuit, the state agency, for $1.2 million. The case stems a violent encounter on the night of May 30th, 2020, when photographer Carolyn Cole and Houston Bureau Chief Molly Hennessy Fisk were battered with blunt projectiles, tear gas, chemical sprayed by troopers interfering with their constitutionally protected First Amendment rights. The veteran war correspondents have traveled to Minneapolis after Floyd's killing to cover what had become a global story of police brutality. They found it. Media was granted exemptions from a nighttime curfew imposed by Governor Walz, citing the critical need for journalists to be free to safely document the events. Yet, apparently, the police were never told this. Shortly after 8 p.m., as Cole and Hennessy Fisk stood across the street from protesters on East 31st Street in Nicollet, near the 5th Precinct Police Headquarters, a legion of Minnesota State Troopers moved towards the journalists, announcing that curfew had taken effect and ordering crowds to disperse. Cole and Hennessy Fisk and other reporters in the group pointed to their clearly visible press gear to the troopers. Cole was wearing a flak jacket emblazoned with the word TV and carrying a large camera and bag, while Hennessy Fisk wore a press badge around her neck and held a notebook. The officers continued to advance on the press group, backing them into a corner before firing rubber bullets and using pepper spray. The troopers intentionally sprayed Cole in the eyes, which she captured on camera, according to the lawsuit. Hennessy Fisk was shot at least five times in the leg with projectiles and tear gas canisters, which left her bloodied and bruised. Cole suffered a corneal abrasion and chemical burns on her eyes and skin. A photo enclosed in the civil complaint shows Cole crouched at a brick corner, draped in camera equipment, doused in chemical liquid, and screaming in agony. Each journalist required medical treatment for their wounds. Being attacked by the Minnesota State Patrol 4 years ago was an experience no other journalist should have to face, Cole wrote in a statement. I hope this ruling upholding our First Amendment rights will help protect other photographers and reporters trying to do their job. And here is the line where I lost it. The State Patrol did not admit wrongdoing in the statement. Messages left seeking comment were not immediately returned. You're not taking account. You're not admitting to your wrongdoing. You're not admitting you effed up, are you? Well, you are, but we have to pay that. The taxpayers of Minneapolis-St. Paul. We of Minneapolis-St. Paul and Minnesota, because it's a Minnesota State Patrol issue. We have to pay for your crap-ass police work. And if you don't want to apologize, then pull it out of your own damn budget. Pull it out of your budget. You pay it. Not us, not Brett, not me, not anyone listening to me. We should not have to pay this as long as you cowards sit there and not admit you blanked up. I didn't do this. I can read press and TV. You did this. And as we have this whole Ricky Cobb thing and you guys parade expert after expert about how infallible the police are. You were hired goons that night. And you cost the state $1.2 million. But you cowards do not want to go on out there and admit blame, admit fault, take responsibility for your actions. Well, then you pay this damn fine yourselves. Pull it out of your police budgets. Pull it out of your retirement fund. I don't care. You can't have it both ways. You can't be sitting there going, we didn't do anything wrong, while we have to pay for what you clearly did wrong. You guys want to just forget all this stuff, don't you? The out-of-control nature of the law enforcement in this state. You guys were hunting the media every night because I think that that's what you wanted to do. And when you couldn't find people because there was a curfew, you just said, well, there's some people over there. Well, that's the media. Get them! And that seems to have been a theme. How many times have we seen the video of the one coward Minneapolis police officer doing the drive-by chemical spraying of protesters who were not a threat to them? Because you just, that's what you guys want to do. You want to work here, come beat on the people of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then go back to your tertiary suburban houses and talk about those animals in the city. No, the only animals were you. The only animals were you. You were the animals, not us. I know there's been a lot of efforts to fix some of this crap. But when you basically don't even want to admit your fault, and right now your little sphincters are puckering up real tight, aren't they there, State Patrol? But you expect us to pay for your malfeasance? Bull. Bull. Either you admit fault or you pay it yourself. Leave us out of your little emotional drama queens stuff here, okay? Seriously. You don't want to admit they did not admit wrongdoing? No, you were shooting at the press. You were being douchebags upon douchebags to chemical spray them in the face. Yeah, it was you. It wasn't me. Wasn't Brett, wasn't Patrick, wasn't anyone here. It was you. Only cowards hide behind stuff like this. And right now, once again, you guys are dealing with a court case in Minneapolis of the shooting of Ricky Cobb, where once again it was a black man, and once again that gun was out of its holster, and the safety was off, and the finger was on the trigger, because it was a black man. And you killed him. And you want to look at me and say, come on, Matt, you need to take into account. You want, show me you have some level of personal responsibility here. Like I said, you don't want to admit wrongdoing? Fine. Then the State Patrol should pull that $1.2 million out of their own damn budget. And do not expect us, the taxpayers of this state, to front the bill. Or why don't you just, you got those cute little hats. Why don't you pass that hat around to all the State Patrol guys? Everyone can throw $20, $30 in there. Cover it yourselves. Or admit you screwed up. Because you can't have it both ways. And especially in this day and age where you're sitting there acting as if we cannot question the actions of a police officer in the case of Ricky Cobb. You sure get quiet when everyone says, you guys effed up royally back in 2020 on your little media hunting expeditions. Don't. Admit you screwed up and be done with this. Stop acting as if... You don't understand. No, I understand completely. Either that or you got a bunch of dummies who can't read the word TV on someone's jersey. Can't see press, P-R-E-S-S. We know what was going on. You guys wanted to ride some. You wanted to get some. You wanted to take some down. You wanted to be the tough guys. And when you couldn't find people, you found the media. Disgusting. But seriously, don't you dare sit there and all of a sudden, when you talk about the virtue and the decency of the State Patrol and how you can't hold Londrigan accountable for Ricky Cobb, don't all of a sudden get like this when you guys are found to be guilty. Or like I said, find your pretty little hats and pass those around and you can pay the $1.2 million and leave us the heck out of it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll try to calm down. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world.
No, that just makes me, I can't remember how, I have a hard time remembering how angry I was about that whole thing. I just remember. I just remember being stunned at the brutality of the law enforcement in this city. Stunned at the way that and like I said, in you know they're this is, you know, Derek Chauvin's not all of us. And then they went on the hunting expedition of Jaleel Stallings. And then they kept going after and shooting at the media, knowing it was the media. Someone asked the question, are those State Patrol officers who brutally attacked the media still State Patrol officers? They should have been kicked out of this state 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Don't tell me those guys are still on the force. Are you going to give me a press conference and tell me how they're really good guys? Yeah, who attacked the media.
Can I just say this? I know Minneapolis. Okay. I know O'Hara's trying to fix a lot of this stuff. And the police department that we had in Minneapolis and the State Patrol and this law enforcement mentality that existed in the city about... And by the way, for all you guys on the right who like this, there's like, how dare you say defund the police? You forget how bad things were. And when we're all scrawling out a $1 million check as taxpayers, you know, we're not defunding the police. We're supplementing incoming them at this point through their bad behavior. I know O'Hara is trying to clean up the Minneapolis Police Department. Can I make one suggestion? And I think this is a good suggestion. I think we should subsidize houses in the city of Minneapolis for Minneapolis police. That if you are willing to become a police officer, we'll cover, I don't know, third, maybe half the cost of a house in the city of Minneapolis. And get these police officers living in the city that they police. Because that is a huge problem right now. And it was something that you saw displayed in 2020. A bunch of police officers who basically don't live anywhere near the city coming in, treating its residents like villains, like animals, and then running back out and talking about how they're animals. I think we should have at least a third of that police department living in the city of Minneapolis itself. And I think that that's actually a pretty good investment. If you need to get people on the police force, well, hey, here's the deal. We'll cover a third of the cost of your house for you. We'll cover half the cost of your house for you. whatever the case may be. Because I guarantee you, you'll fill up those police ranks. And you know what? I think in the long run, that will create a better police department. And once again, State Patrol, I know that was then. Doesn't excuse it. And I know you guys have put some things into place. But please don't tell me those patrol officers are still employed by the Minnesota State Patrol. And don't think that people don't have a right to question what is going on in the Ricky Cobb case when we have that $1.2 million going out the door. We have a right to know. But at the very least, be big boys and big girls over at the State Patrol. Pull your pants up, get in front of a microphone, and say, boy, did we screw up that day. We're really sorry. Then at least when we have to scratch out the taxpayer dollars for this little facade charade, then basically at least we know that we got some acknowledgement from you that you know you did wrong. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
I was feeling down and my mood wasn't right.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Okay, I'm going to cleanse myself at this point because, I'm a little miffed, as you can tell. Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour is coming to the Pantages Theater on April 13th. I've got a pair of tickets right now if you want to go see Steph on April 13th. John Fugelsang, Stephanie Miller, Hal Sparks, Frangela, all coming to town. Caller number 5 right now, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Caller number 5, you'll get yourself a pair of tickets and be nice to Brett. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Another story here I wanted to make sure I mention. Because it's interesting that once again, and this goes back to the Fox 9 story I was talking about. It's the beginning of the story kind of Arnie Carlson shows up here, the former governor. And the implication is that the Minnesota Department of Health screwed this up. And the reality is it doesn't sound like this is a problem with the Minnesota Department of Health. This actually sounds like it's the city of Stillwater. Nearly a year after a city well was shut down due to PFAS contamination, Stillwater residents will soon see the first official notice from the government of the problem, a delay that's drawn criticism from Governor Arne Carlson. In a letter to the Minnesota Department of Health, Carlson called it stunning that people weren't informed sooner. This goes well beyond careless management or administration snafu. People's lives are placed in danger by the deliberate inaction of their own government, he wrote in a March 20th email to the health commissioner, Brooke Cunningham. So the implication is that somehow that he should that the Department of Health should have done something. The problem is with Carlson's note is it doesn't take into account that the Minnesota Department of Health actually did what they were supposed to do here. And it sounds like there are some questions on what Stillwater was doing. The Minnesota Department of Health on October 31st of last year sent a letter to the Stillwater City Council notifying them that was issuing a health risk advisory for PFAS at well number 6. The letter included 2 recommendations, the first being to notify the public. So the Minnesota Department of Health on October 31st of last year told the Stillwater City Council, you need to notify the public that there's a high PFAS in well number 6. It is important that people consuming the water be informed about any potential health risks and actions they take on reduced exposure to PFASs in their drinking water, as well as any actions the water system is taking. The letter also recommended the city plan for and take action to reduce the PFASs in the drinking water supply. All right. So far, so nothing too wrong here. This is October 31st, though. And once again, Arne Carlson is ripping on the Minnesota Department of Health. Minnesota Department of Health went to Stillwater, 6 months ago and said, hey, you guys got to fix this problem. The city didn't go public immediately. That was the city's call, not the Minnesota Department of Health. Instead, it hired a St. Paul engineering consultant, TKDA, on a $25,000 contract to craft a PFAS communications plan. The closure of the well was not widely shared until the consultant's communications plan was placed on an agenda for a March 6 workshop meeting, and the contaminated well was reported by the Star Tribune on March 4th. So, once again, it's... You, Minnesota Department of Health did what they were supposed to do. The city of Stillwater basically decided to tread water, literally, and hired some outside consulting group as opposed to inform the people right away. That's not on the Department of Health. That's on Stillwater. And Stillwater was so intent on not saying anything that it was March 4th where finally it got out there. Stillwater Mayor Ted Kozlowski on Tuesday didn't respond to text or email messages. City Administrator Joel Coleman said the city shut down well number 6 on April 17th of 2023 after a second test revealed problems. Okay, so this actually started out on October. Okay, so this must have been October of the previous year of 2022, October 23rd, 2022. The city shut down the well number 6 on April 17th after a second test revealed the problems. So this is a year and a half? Wow, I thought when I read this originally, I thought this was just last year. So this is a year and a half. So it must have been October 31st, 2022, the Minnesota Department of Health calls Stillwater, says, hey, you got problems with well 6. You need to tell the people and then come up with a plan to deal with this. April 17th, 2023, they shut down well 6 after a second test revealed problems. The state health department recommended testing over nearly a year to confirm PFAS numbers and to avoid the false positive, Coleman said. So basically, even though they got warned in October of 2022, hey, you might want to inform the public of this, they basically said, well, we're going to do another test. And when we do that other test, then we'll determine what it's going to be. And at that point, even though the PFAS numbers were still high, they just shut down the well. They never told the public. That's, once again, not Minnesota Department of Health. That's Stillwater. As far as the city's delay in notifying the public, Coleman said it takes time to print copies of the city's newsletter and mail them out, which is how city residents will see the first official notice of PFAS contamination on the April 1st newsletter. Coleman also said Stillwater's PFAS news has been in the media. The city has also created a PFAS information page on its website. In a post on Facebook earlier this month, Kozlowski, the mayor, spoke directly to city residents about the PFAS issue, but made several misleading statements. Some might even call them lies. Kozlowski said the state health department has directed actions to shut down the wells in some communities like Woodbury due to PFAS levels. That's not true. Woodbury closed its own wells on its own authority. City officials have confirmed that. So that's just made up, that the health department, you know, basically. So the health department's rules were basically to inform them that they had high PFAS levels, to tell them to inform the public, and then tell them to get a game plan to deal with this. But, you know, continue to test to make sure it is indeed bad. They never told the public in Stillwater, even when they did a second test and determined that PFAS was indeed really bad, they just shut down the well and didn't say anything. And it was only when the public became aware of it through the Star Tribune on March 4th that all of a sudden now, oh, well, you all knew about this. And the implication that Kozlowski is making is that, well, the Minnesota Department of Health could have told us, ordered us to shut down the well like they did in Woodbury, which is not true. Woodbury never was told to shut down the well. Woodbury, when they had high PFAS levels, shut it down themselves because they were concerned about their citizens. Kozlowski also said the Minnesota Department of Health hasn't recommended the closure of Stillwater's well. The agency, in fact, can't order a closure due to PFAS levels because it lacks the legal authority to do so. The agency said in its October 31st letter, it did recommend the city take action to reduce exposure to PFAS in the city's drinking water. But once again, that's all they can do as the Minnesota Department of Health. I find it, and Arne Carlson, I actually like Arne Carlson. I think that's the disingenuous part here. Arne Carlson is presuming that that there is some level of mandate that the Minnesota Department of Health has that they could have shut this well down. They don't have that ability. All they can do, like they did in Woodbury, is tell them, hey, you need to shut this down because you got the high contamination level in there. And you need to let the people know. That's not the Minnesota Department of Health's problem. This is Stillwater's problem. And, I mean, unless you're saying that you feel as if, and once again, this is not a criticism of the Minnesota Department of Health, if you think the Minnesota Department of Health should have the right to go into a town and shut down a well if it's really bad, well, then we need to change the laws on that. But they can't do that right now. And by the way, can I just say for the record, I have zero doubt in my mind that if they did have that power, that a lot of municipalities would be like, how dare the big state government come in here and try to tell us what to do? No, by all means, they're doing, frankly, what conservatives should dream of. Hey, we've discovered a problem. You need a retest. Tell the public and come up with a game plan in case these levels are indeed this high. You guys getting caught with your pants around your ankles, having not done anything about it, that's not the Minnesota Department of Health problem. And the fact that you guys seem to be desperately trying to blame the Minnesota Department of Health tells me exactly you guys kind of know you guys got caught with your pants down on this one. So, Brett, who is our winner of these tickets here for Stephanie Miller?
Yeah, congratulations to Gretchen from Minneapolis.
Gretchen from Minneapolis, enjoy. I've got another pair of tickets to give away sometime this week. Listen for the chance there. And then we'll have more tickets next week as well to go see Stephanie Miller. And if you don't want to do the call-in, you don't like to do that, just go get tickets. There's some great tickets still available. Go get them at the Pantages Theater April 13th and enjoy. It is the kickoff. I'd love to see if we can sell out the Pantages Theater. It'd be fantastic if we could sell out the Pantages Theater for their first stop on the tour. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I also want to bring up another story, and this is actually from a few days ago, that I guess you could say it leads me to ask some real questions once again about, I know we are trying to fix things since the time of the State Patrol, you know, attacking two Los Angeles Times reporters, stuff like that. I know we're trying to do things here, but I'm wondering if things aren't in some ways just not getting done. Before I get to that, Vern is in White Bear Lake. He wanted to chime in on the Stillwater issue before we get into the next subject. Go ahead, Vern.
Hi, Dan. I was going to point out that Brainerd, I don't know if Brainerd is putting chlorine in their water, but Brainerd resisted the state. Some years ago? City of Brainerd.
Yep. Something like that. Was it the same thing where they're saying, hey, your wells are contaminated, and they're like, No.
It was the city resisting putting chlorine in their water
supply. Oh, we wanted just to do more natural water supply. Oh, that's right. I thought I couldn't remember what – I can't remember what zone it was, but you said it was Brainerd. I'm not going to question you on that. Go ahead.
It was a long time ago. It was 20, 25 years ago.
I remember that was back in the time with fluoride, too. There was a lot of cities that were really
– Might have been fluoride.
Yeah.
Might have been fluoride.
Yeah. Thanks.
But I was going to point that out, that city resisted that state, you know, and they got away with it.
Yeah. Thanks, Vern. I appreciate the phone call. Fluoride was a big one that was – you know, there was not a lot of places. I mean, once again, it did show that, you know, it seemed to show that there was some definite benefits to getting fluoride in the water. Some cities protested that. I'm not sure exactly the deal. I will say this. Yeah, if you're one of those people that was upset about fluoride in the water and you got PFASs out there, I mean, hey, how many little pieces of plastic do I have floating around in my body at this point, man? I don't even want to know. And my guess is going to be, here's my guess. And when it comes to the PFASs and the little pieces of plastic and all that stuff, my guess is going to be in 10, 15 years, we're going to see some memos that said back in the 70s, they all knew this stuff was going into the water supply. And they basically, because they didn't want to lose their money, they basically kept it quiet. And that's when the companies are going to come out and say, you know, sure, some mistakes were made, but let's not play the blame game now. When basically this is such a problem that's causing insane amounts of health problems, because that's what does happen with this stuff. 952-946-6205. Tell you what, let's take a break. We'll come back. I'll get into this last story about the guy breaking into the police impound lot, or the forensics garage. We'll get to that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Wednesday.
Had another dream about you these days.
We'll be right back.
show. God, it just is. Just, it's amazing how many people on the right want to just ignore all the stuff that went on during that time back then in the with the murder of George Floyd, and then in the days after the Bob Kroll letter. The Bob Kroll letter, where he implied he and Gazelka were trying to overthrow the government of the state of Minnesota. Think about that for a second. Think about that. Craziness, man. Just craziness. All these right-wing boogaloo boys coming into our state. Remember when Wall said it sounds like this is happening in every Republican? No, it's not. It's black people in Minneapolis. And then all of a sudden they all get arrested. It's all a bunch of white guys from freaking Texas. Well, Jeez. Craziness, man. Just craziness. That's what happens when things go down really a bad path, which they've been going down for decades. Let's just be honest about it. A 21-year-old man faces charges after he allegedly rifled through 24 cars in the Minneapolis Police Department's forensic garage and stole evidence. Huh? According to a criminal complaint, Minneapolis police sergeant went down to the department's forensic garage on March 15th as part of a homicide investigation. When he got there, he found items scattered around the car that had not previously been there. Surveillance camera footage showed that Dakota Poplinski was inside the lot for about 2 hours on March 10th. The complaint states the video shows him rummaging through 21 cars, throwing items over a chain link fence. He then climbed the fence, gathered up the items, and left the area. 2 days later, video showed that he returned to the car and went through 3 cars in the span of 2 hours. Documents state that he also trespassed on the lot in early February. On March 22nd, Poplinski was walking towards the fence in the impound lot carrying a box for a 24-inch HP computer and keyboard along with a box for a French horn. The items were valued at $959 and $1,000, respectively. The charges state that he ran through the hole in the fence and hopped in a car. He fled from police but was eventually stopped by an unmarked squad car. Inside Poplinski's car, investigators found a .32 revolver, live rounds of .22 ammunition, a Coach bag valued at $273, which contained a bag of white powder that field tested positive for fentanyl, an unlabeled bottle of something else. Poplinski is charged with fleeing police after officer theft, possession of stolen property. He had his first court appearance on Tuesday. Since we learned about the break-in, we have been continually in communication with the Minneapolis impound lot and the Minneapolis Police Department about the possibility of impacted criminal cases, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office said. We've been working together to document the affected vehicles, access the impact of the cases, and ensure we make necessary disclosures of any pending case. Now, is this as bad as when the Hennepin County Sheriff allowed, it basically sounds like welcomed someone, at least someone in the department, someone with access, welcomed Rebecca Brannon, the right-wing journalist, in to rummage through former Hennepin County Sheriff Hutchinson's car, which was held in impound out in Medina? No. That was pretty brazen. And that was someone in law enforcement saying, we are willing to throw out the entire case because there's no chance in hell the vehicle would have ever been allowed to be used as evidence against Hutch in any case. So that case was gone. They basically decided to throw out the criminal case just so they could go after Hutch. That was pretty brazen. And as a matter of fact, and I said back then when that happened, if I was being charged with a crime and I had a vehicle held at that Medina facility, I would have a court order presented to the judge that afternoon saying you have to throw this out because they were just letting journalists go rummage through cars and there is not much you could do to argue that that hadn't happened. That was pretty bad. There's an impression there's a little bit more of a security to a impound lot for forensics impound lot than a chain link fence, let alone a guy could be a repeat customer in crime. And by the way, it sounds like he might have been there 3 times. If I read that correctly, on March 22nd, yeah, 2 days later, it showed that on March 15th he broke in, then 2 days later on March 17th, then on March 22nd he was basically broke in again. He broke in 3 times to the forensic lot. And I get it. You've got a staffing issue in the Minneapolis Police Department. But I'm kind of stunned this has happened because, let's face it, is there a vehicle in that lot at this point that can be used in any prosecution? No. The guy... Okay, now I got to make sure I say this. I'm hoping the bag of fentanyl wasn't just sitting in a car out there, that the fentanyl had been taken out of the car and put into an evidence locker of some sort so that it could be used in a future thing. Did this guy find drugs in a car that the police had missed when they did their first investigation? Or did he bring his own? I don't know. It does sound like he might have had his own. That is, how are the vehicles not locked? How are the vehicles not locked?
You brought up the point. That's like any defense lawyer's dream. Oh, your evidence was robbed at an impound lot? Yeah, we're throwing that out right away.
Yeah, three times.
Yeah.
And the fact is, it sounds like most of the vehicles in the impound lot, he rummaged through 21 cars on one time, three cars another time, where he got the computer and the French horn. By the way, let's not skip past the French horn. He had a French horn. He's like, you know, maybe I want to get in creative in the arts, you know.
You got to better yourself if you're going to rob some.
You know, you're kind of expanding your horizons as a criminal there. I'm kind of surprised. Well, it does point to this guy being an idiot burglar that he wouldn't realize the French horn is probably worth $1,000 alone. And so, yeah. I'm more perplexed by this in how this is the security. And it sounds like, once again, this guy cut a hole in the fence. You know, it's, yeah, I'm a little concerned about this. But needless to say, I think any vehicle that was in that forensic lot, if that was part of any trial, it's gone now. Because how in the world can you go back in front of a judge and say, yeah, the guy that rummaged through it, by the way, he found some drugs we'd missed. Thanks to him. No, I don't think that's how it's going to work. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We are back here on a Thursday. Till then, see ya.